Welcome to Sparta Hack and welcome to the seminar. We're going to talk about Microsoft Azure and how it can relate, how you can use it to make an excellent hack for your project this weekend. My name is David Giard. I work with Microsoft. I'm a technical evangelist, and I'm here to help you guys. So I'll give you some information in this seminar. We have the room for an hour and a half, so I'll give as much as I can, but it doesn't end there. If you have, try it out. If you have questions, we're right down the hall. Come to our table. There's myself, Anna's there, Brian is there. We'll do our best to answer questions for you and help you along to create the best hack you can. We're here to talk about cloud computing. Cloud computing is a big topic. Everybody's talking about the cloud, public clouds, private clouds, data in the clouds, application in the cloud, security in the cloud. It's become almost a marketing term, which means it's become almost a meaningless term. And so I want to start today's presentation with my definition of cloud computing. Cloud computing, when I talk about it, means when you'll take some or all of your data or your application and you move that to allow someone else to host it, someone else like Microsoft Azure, to host it in a highly scalable, highly reliable way. I mean, that's cloud computing. And I bring this up because in your career, you may encounter other people that are selling cloud computing services. And because there isn't really a standard definition out there, you need to ask them. Say, well, what do you mean? What exactly is your cloud computing service? Is it databases? Is it virtual machines? Is it web services? And is it scalable? Is the redundancy built in? The term itself has just become overused, as is so often the case in computer science. But I talk about a definition that fits Microsoft Azure. What I mean by highly scalable is that you can, if you have an application that is being consumed by your users, let's say you have a web app, for example, and suddenly demand for that application goes up very high for a finite period of time, such that one instance of that service can't handle it, you can very easily scale out and run two instances, or four instances, or 10 instances, or 20, or 100 instances. Azure provides that kind of scalability, very quickly scale out to multiple instances, and then to scale back down again when demand goes down. So it's great for things like concert ticket sales. Well, concert ticket sales, they have high demand when tickets for U2 go on sale, but as soon as those sell out, the demand goes way back down again until Taylor Swift concert tickets go on sale, and then it goes way back up again. Lots of high demand for short periods of time. That's when it's really ideal. Instead of buying all those servers to meet the maximum demand, you can just rent them as you need them because you pay for what you use. You pay 10 times as much for for 10 instances as you do for one, that sort of thing. Not really a big deal for a hackathon since we're not going to build super highly scalable stuff this weekend, but if you want to continue your project later on, that might become a big issue. And then high reliability is created in Azure by lots of redundancy. There's all kinds of redundancy built into Azure, lots of monitoring of your services, so that if something fails, whether it's hardware or software related, then Azure will detect that and then point users to a different copy of your data or a different copy of your application. They'll do that for you automatically. And that's how we build reliability into Azure. All right. If you're using Azure, let's see what we got here. A couple of things I want to make note of for Azure. A lot of people, they, because it's called Microsoft Azure, they think that it's only for Microsoft tools. And that's absolutely false. I have actually a penguin with an Azure logo on it, its belly, just to prove that point. This is, if you're a PHP developer or a Python developer or a Java developer, you can deploy those applications inside of Azure and they will run fine. If you are on Linux, you can create a virtual machine, a Linux virtual machine, and deploy it with Azure and SSH into it and install whatever software you want into it. If you are an iPhone or Android developer, you can create web services and call those web services from those other platforms. There's a huge amount of support in Azure for competing technologies and for open source technologies, things that have nothing to do with Microsoft at all. I'm going to show you a couple of those things here today. What I want to focus on in this workshop is different scenarios where you might want to use Azure for some of your hacks. Maybe it'll give you some ideas. Out of curiosity, who here doesn't yet have an idea for a hack? Raise your hand if you don't have decided what you're going to hack on. There's one guy in the back, a couple guys in the back. I see a few hands here. Is there anybody here that has a team that is willing to invite other people to their team, that has room for other people? Raise your hand if that is the case. Raise them high. So those of you that don't have an idea, consider talking to those guys and piggyback on them. And if they, there were more hands that don't have an idea yet than have projects, at least walk around and just talk to people that are, find out what they're doing. And that may jar some ideas of what you're doing. Or hopefully what I talk about today will also help you with that. All right, so here's a few scenarios that you can use. The simplest one is a web application. So you may want to, maybe your entire hack is just a web application. Maybe you want to create a portal that displays some data. I don't know, I saw one that was crime statistics in the city of Chicago. You just want to display that on the screen. Or maybe you want to do something like, I saw one last weekend that was, they were connecting together buyers and sellers of farm equipment. Or not buyers and sellers, but renters of farm equipment. People had a farm equipment to rent, and other people had farm equipment that they needed, and people could swap it kind of in a Craigslist-like way, and they just created a web app for doing that. Azure lets you create web apps very, very quickly. I'm going to show a demo of that in a little while. And this is created the same way you would create any other web application. Of course, there's support for ASP.NET, that's Microsoft's web platform, but there's also support for Node.js, for Java applications, for PHP, and for Python, because these are all supported on Microsoft IIS. And if you want to get something up in a hurry, there are templates for things like WordPress or Joomla or Drupal, your content management systems. So if all you want to do is maybe have a web app to enhance the rest of your application, you don't want to put a whole lot of code into the web application. Your hack is something else, but maybe you're collecting data and you just want to show it on the screen, it might make sense to create a WordPress site. With a couple of clicks, you can do that in Azure and deploy a WordPress site. I love web apps because they are very inexpensive and they're very easy to deploy. And for a lot of people, this is their first experience in Azure. If you want to use Node, there's a couple of Node starter templates as well to get you up and running in a hurry. So those are web applications. I'll show you that. I'm going to go through all the scenarios first, and I'll show the demos afterwards. Data storage. This is if you've got some persistent data that you want to store and track. We've got all kinds of options for that. I correctly printed this is SQL Server on here. SQL Server is a relational database. If you've worked with any kind of relational databases before, it adheres to those standards. You can connect to it and store. It'll enforce schemas and enforce referential integrity and things like that. If you like NoSQL solutions, NoSQL solutions tend to be simpler and faster and more scalable, but they lack some of that enforcement. But we've got options for that as well. Azure tables are probably the simplest one. There's just a key and a bunch of properties. So if you have just some simple data you want to store, maybe a primary key and first name, last name, address, or maybe the high scores of a game. Azure tables are a good way to do that. Blob storage is available for storing large files like images or video. That's what Blob Storage does. DocumentDB is Microsoft's newest NoSQL database. It stores JSON data. So if you're used to using NoSQL, DocumentDB is a great choice. If you'd like to use open source software, you can use MongoDB as well. One of the nice things about what I'm talking about here is that you don't have to build a machine to do that. You don't have to install an operating system or install the database or manage the database. Same thing with the web apps. You don't have to worry about the web server. That's all abstracted away from you. You just connect to an Azure web app and create and start uploading your files. In the case of data, you can just connect to a database and start adding data to it. It's much simpler than if you had to build this whole thing yourself. Speaking of data, one really good solution for mobile applications. Mobile applications, a lot of times, they want to share data. So if I've got an iPhone application, and I want all the users of my iPhone application to see the same data. For example, a game. If everybody's playing a game, maybe I want, at any given time, to be able to see the top 10 scores of all users. Well, of course, I could have the phones talking to each other, but that's not very practical. A better solution is to store all that data in some common location and let all the phones talk to that database, that common location database. That's a pretty common typical paradigm for sharing data. Azure mobile apps are the way you do this in Azure. It's a really simple way of doing it. I think I have a picture right here of that. Do I Azure Mobile Apps. Okay, so if I have a mobile application, somewhere out in the cloud, I have a database. With mobile apps, it's SQL Server by default. And then in front of that, I'll put a REST API. And a REST API is just a way of exposing some back-end resource, like the tables in a database, through HTTP. It is a web service. And then rather than the phone or the phone application, rather than your code talking directly to this, it will talk to this web service and send a JSON or it'll receive JSON, depending on whether it's going to insert or update or retrieve data. So it will talk to the REST API, and the REST API talks to your database and then sends a response back. And that response might be some JSON being sent back. And there's a couple of advantages to this. One is that now other mobile applications can talk to that same REST API and share that same data. It doesn't have to be a phone, it can be a tablet or a PC, and it doesn't have to be even a Windows device. It could be an iPhone or an Android application or a JavaScript application. It could be a Xamarin application. Anybody familiar with Xamarin? Xamarin's a tool for building cross-platform mobile applications. Microsoft just announced that we've purchased or we're about to purchase Xamarin, if you wanted to use one code base to manage three different platforms, Windows, Android, and iPhone, then you can do so. But this solution works for all these devices because REST is a web server. REST is a standard. HTTP is a standard. JSON is a standard. If it's all implemented as standards, then you can access this from any kind of device or any kind of code. You could write Ruby on Rails to do this. You could write a local Java application to do this. A local Python application, whatever you want to do. Anything that can talk HTTP can do this. Now, this is code that you could write yourself, of course. You could create a database, write a web service in front of it, collect a JSON, turn it into an insert statements, an update statements, and so on. But that takes time, and that's just plumbing code. That's just code that a lot of applications can do. Let Azure Mobile Apps do that for you, and you get that thing up right away. It'll automatically create methods for create, read, update, and delete. We call it the CRUD, C-R-U-D, the basic database stuff that you do. There's even declaratively you can add security, so users have to sign in before they can use that web service, and you can set it up so that they can sign in with Twitter or Facebook or Google or Microsoft accounts. And the reason we can support all those other ones is because we're using standards. We're using just basic OAuth standards and tokens that we can send to this REST API. All that stuff is taken care of for you, and then you, if you want to modify it, you can. You would just write the code that makes your application special, the validations that are important, what kind of data you're sending to it, do I have to do something to that data before I insert it? That's the code that you would focus on, but the basic plumbing stuff is done for you. Internet of Things is a hot topic right now, especially at hackathons. Maybe not especially, but it is, a lot of people at hackathons are building devices. They're going to talk to the internet. They're going to store data up in the cloud somewhere. And there are tools inside of Azure for making that easier. If you, for example, have a Arduino board that's collecting temperature information or location information, or information about its environment, then it may make sense to send that information to the cloud and to do something to it. And there are tools like IoT Hub that will allow you to, every time it receives data through a web service, automatically route that data, save it to a database, call some other service, maybe run some queries and check for some alerts. Is the temperature above a certain range, above or below outside of some certain range? If so, then push data back down to our, send a message to a phone, things like that. There are accelerators inside of Azure to help you with that. Machine learning is a hot topic right now for data scientists. And if you want to build a hack that's going to take some data and do some analysis on that data, and do some visualizations on that data, Azure has some tools that will make that a lot easier. The idea behind machine learning is that we're going to take data that we don't really know exactly how the properties of that data are related. We have some ideas about what the data looks like, and we'll give it some information to it about it, and then we'll do some iterative processing. We'll say we believe that these four properties here are related to these four properties over there, but we're not sure exactly how, and we'll We'll run it through. We'll take what machine learning does. It'll take some guesses, come up with a model, test that model, run it again, and refine that model. Run it through multiple times. This takes a lot of processing power to do these kinds of analyses. And this is ideal for the cloud because you're running a lot of compute power over a short period of time. Machine learning has been around for a long time, but typically what you have to do is write a lot of code to do that. Well, with Azure, there's something called ML Studio. There's a screenshot of it right here. Well, with ML Studio, you don't need to write a lot of code. There's a nice graphical interface where you just drag some things on and say, this is the source of my data, and you set some property to say that data is coming from this service over here or this file over here, and you can split your data out and set properties, what percentage is split. You can tell it, define what the properties are in your data, what the columns that you're gathering. There are dozens of different widgets you can drag on here and set properties on. And if you don't see the one you want, then there's actually a code widget that you can write your own code. You can write that either in R or in Python. Both of those are supported in here. Once you've done that, and you run this thing, this run button down at the bottom will actually run through your data and figure out some predictive analysis and figure out the algorithm of how these things are related. And then you can turn it into a web service. And with the click of a button, you can publish that web service so that when you get new data, then you can call that web service. You can send that data to that web service and actually do your put your predictions into action. Here's four properties that are dependent on these other four properties. Just pass them in and say, what do I expect these other four properties to be? I have some links in here, actually. I'll make these available online, so this whole slide deck. So if you go to this tinyurl.com, AZML Hackathon, there's an article there written by a colleague of mine, Jennifer Marsman. Some of you have probably met her before. She wrote the title of the article is How to Win a Hackathon with Machine Learning. And it takes about an hour to go through her tutorial. She points you to some resources. She just published actually a video using machine learning to predict whether or not you would survive the Titanic sinking. So there are properties about the passengers of the Titanic, for example, their gender, whether they have a first class ticket or a steerage ticket, their age, you know. So I haven't looked at the data, but women and children probably went in the lifeboats first. People in first class certainly were closer to the lifeboats. If you were in steerage, then your chances would go way down, things like that. Maybe the age of the people. And she did some analysis to see, what were the factors that went into surviving the Titanic. Because that data exists, that historical data exists, a lot of it. And then you can put your age and your gender and what class ticket you have and see whether or not you would have actually survived this thing, or if you had gone down with Jack and had listened to that song for all eternity. All right. Oh, these slides are out of order. Internet of Things. Oh, I just have a couple of links here, so I should have put this earlier. This is the Internet of Things. There are some really good resources for if you're building some kind of hardware that wants to talk to the cloud. InternetOfYourThings.com has a bunch of samples available to it. Another colleague of mine, Paul DiCarlo, on his blog, he's got a lot of videos that he can show you to walk you through building things like gathering data from a Raspberry Pi and pushing that into the cloud and building solutions around that. Same thing with WindowsOnDevices.com. These are some great resources to give you some ideas and walk you through some sample code. All right, all the things I've talked about so far are services. We call that platform as a service, PaaS. And what I mean when I say platform as a service, you don't have to worry about the fact that there is a computer underneath this. All that is abstracted away from you. You never have to touch the operating system. You never have to install any hardware. You just connect to some service and you start configuring it, which makes it a lot easier. It's a lot less work on your part. And usually, even if it's not a hackathon, even if you're dealing stuff in the real world, generally it's a better idea to say, I'm just going to focus on the part of the application that I care about. I'm not really worried about the low-level operating system because I'm not writing so much a Windows app or a Linux app. I'm writing a database app or I'm writing a web app. I want something up high that abstracts away what's down low. I can focus my energy on this. But every once in a while, you may run into an issue where the solution isn't in these services that are available to me. So for example, if I wanted to write a, I want to use Azure as a light.
Tap, tap.
Too late.
I'm too late. If I want to use Azure, and I want to write a Ruby on Rails web application, there isn't a real
good solution in Azure for Ruby on Rails. However, when I have an option, I can create a virtual machine. And once I create a virtual machine, then I can store that in Azure. I can do whatever I want. I can install the operating system on it. I can install whatever software I want on it. I can install Ruby on Rails on it. I can install Linux on it. It doesn't have to be a Windows operating system, whatever operating system I want.
Because it's mine. And you don't really have to install it.
There are actually images available in Azure, pre-built images. These serve as templates for building your virtual machine. So if I wanted Windows Server 2012, or if I wanted Windows with SQL Server installed, pre-installed, I can do that. If I wanted Ubuntu Linux version, a particular version of Ubuntu, or a particular version of Red Hat Linux, there are 10 images for that. If I want Linux with a mean stack on it, or Linux with a lamp stack, there are images for that. So you can select one of these templates, and there are hundreds of them. Some of them maintained by Microsoft, some of them maintained by the open source community. They're available for you. I hope that it will show up in the list. But they're available to you from within the Azure.
Hang on one second. See if I can get this working. So if I do that, that's good. And here we go. Hang on. I've got a menu here that I've got to go through. So it's the laptop VGA. Just come up here. Is the projector on? The projector's not on. That's my problem.
There is a send to all TV, send to all project.
Ah, thank you. I have a good feeling about this. Okay, virtual machines. It's still hosted in Azure. You still get the high availability, the high reliability, but you have more control. But now with a virtual machine, you have more work than you would with one of these services, but you have more control. There's a trade-off between the amount of work you have to do versus the amount of control. Yes, Aaron?
Question on that. Could you use that to set up something like a web scraper that you're writing in Python? Could you host that on one of the virtual machines and let it scrape and collect the data there?
The question was, could I create something like a Python script hosted on a virtual machine?
Like a web scraper, something that's going out to other, like scraping web pages for information. And then if I don't want to leave my own laptop running for multiple days on end, could I host it? Could I run that on the...
Yeah, so if you wanted to have some web scraping job that goes out to websites and does like crawling and pulls, finds data, and absolutely you create a virtual machine for doing just that, or you run in the cloud. However, for that scenario, you actually could use a service. There's something called web jobs that would allow you to do that, or a schedule job. These are related to schedule jobs. You can do that inside of web apps and create a schedule job. And you can write it in Python because those are supported. Python is supported. So you can do that as well.
Thank you, whoever that guy was. What's your name? What is your name?
Haisham.
Nice
to meet you.
Haisham?
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Haisham. Big hand for Haisham. Yeah. All right. So I'm going to show the demos in a second. I'll just mention a couple of advantages that Azure has. One is that hopefully you guys are using some source code repository. Azure actually has built-in source control. It's part of the Team Foundation services. And you can use that. Team Foundation services is more than just source control. It has automated build and has bug tracking. Everything is part of application lifecycle management. But if you already have a source control repository, if you already have, for example, a GitHub repository or a local Git repository, there's integration with that as well. You can use that every time you do a push into a Git repository or to your GitHub account, then you can have it automatically deployed out to Azure. We can do that as well.
If you're on a team, you probably want to have some sort of source control repository just so you can share code more easily. Built-in redundancy, I talked about that. It makes it more fail-safe. And the auto-scaling, this is when we can actually scale out. You can scale out manually. You can say, wow, this is, you know, U2's concert tickets are going on sale in about 15 minutes. I better beef up this service. You know, one instance isn't going to do it. I need 10 instances. But you can also have it auto-scale automatically so that it says things like, once my CPU usage gets to, let's say, 85%,
add another instance at that point. So every time you have two of them, you know, have two of them, they're both running 85%, I'll add a third instance, so on. Once the firewall is below 40%, remove an instance. So there's actually auto-scaling that's available as well. Not as big a deal in a hackathon, but definitely a big deal when we start pushing these out to the real world. Here's some resources for you. Azure.com, it's actually azure.microsoft.com, but azure.com will get you there. It's easier to remember. That's actually where you go to get started with Azure. Once you'll sign in there, and there's a link to the portal. MVA.ms is a short URL for Microsoft Virtual Academy. On there, you'll see all kinds of videos about lots of different topics. There's an entire section on cloud computing where you'll see dozens of videos there. Same thing with Channel 9. NVIDIA is actually a subset of Channel 9, but Channel 9, we've been publishing lots and lots of videos recently. If this video works out, I may actually publish that on the Channel 9. I'll send you a link to that. But we have some short videos to show you really quickly how do you create a web app, how do you create a virtual machine, things like that. And then buildwindows.com, there's all sorts of videos there as well on, again, lots of topics, but you can find it here. All right, let's see. And where we are, this is, and then also the other resource is us. We'll be here all weekend. We're down this hallway, this parallel hallway right here on the right side, on the other side there. Come on down there and ask us questions. Let me now show you a couple of, I should mention the contest. We do have a contest. The contest is the best application on any Microsoft platform, including Azure. Everybody on the team wins a Dell Venue 8 Pro tablet PC, right?
Yes.
Okay, make sure. All right, so let me show you some demos now. And I'm going to switch to this microphone because I need both hands.
So this slide is available?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
These slides are available?
These slides, I will make them available. Okay. I will send them out through the push notifications to the app. So make sure you install that app, the Sparta Hacks app. Here we go. Delete that slide. Here's some contact information. I'll just show that if you want to grab that. That's my email address, Brian's email address, and our Twitter handles and our blogs and so on. Again, that'll be in the slide deck, so when I send it out. So let's see. I want to go over to here. So the first thing is, if you haven't signed up for your Azure account yet, you should have received an email from Anna. If you did not receive an email from Anna, it probably means you didn't put your email address in here, or maybe you mistyped it. So if you didn't get one, just come down this aisle right here and make sure she has your email address. And in there is a link to MicrosoftAzurePass.com. Select your country. For almost all of you, it'll be the United States. In the email will be a code. Enter that code here and submit it. And it'll ask you to sign in with a Microsoft account. Microsoft account, it can be Outlook.com or Live.com or Hotmail.com. If you don't have one, you can create one and just use it. This pass is only going to be good for 30 days anyway, so you can just create a throwaway account. That's just fine. You can also do that. Sometimes some people run into a problem where they've already used that code to sign up for Azure. Again, just for this 30-day one, just go to Outlook.com and create a brand new email address. If you're having trouble creating one, open up your browser in incognito mode or in private mode. I'm using Microsoft Edge here. That calls it in private mode, in which case it doesn't save any of the cookies, so you won't be automatically logged in. Chrome calls it incognito. I forget what the other browsers call it.
Private browser.
Private browser?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, thanks. They all have something like that. All right. Really quickly, has everybody done this step? Has anybody tried it and had problems with it? Okay. Silence is consent. Good. All right. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go to Azure.com. I think I'm in the in private. I should double check that. Am I? I might not be. Here we go. So if I go to Azure.com, I'll do it over here. Azure.com, which takes me to Azure.microsoft.com. And then over here,
Up at the top is the portal. And that takes me into the Azure portal. The Azure portal, this is relatively new. It has all this HTML5-ish stuff going on in here. In the portal, this map here is kind of nice. It shows you all of the regions around the world. There are 28 Azure regions, and most of them have two data centers that are hundreds of miles apart. And they are each data center has, you know, some of them are bigger than a football field, or most of them are bigger than a football field. They have just thousands and thousands of servers inside of them. So the capacity is huge. Now, there aren't a lot of companies that could provide this kind of scalability. That shows you the green check mark means these are all healthy right now. Every once in a while you go in here and there'll be the yellow exclamation point or a red X indicating there's a problem, and you can drill down into it and say if there's a problem here in Japan and see what that problem is, and it'll tell you. And this is useful if your app isn't working. You know, you'll have some clue, is it my problem, something I'm doing wrong, or is it something that Azure's doing wrong? Because every once in a while there'll be something that goes wrong, and we try to be fully transparent about anything that goes wrong. And over here, these are the apps that I've just pinned to my start page. I'm going to create a new one. New things, you start with this big plus new button in the top left, and if I click on that, what flies out are the categories of services here. There's a lot of different categories of services. If I wanted to create a new web app, for example, I come on here to web and mobile, and I select web app. And from here, I'll create what I'll call a DG test. DG is my initials. And I'll put the date, because I do this a lot, 0227. It has to be unique. The URL of this web app is going to be http://, whatever I type in here, .azurewebsites.net. Now, you can register a domain name, and you can point it to that, to the same site. But by default, it's just going to be this, something.azurewebsites.net. You'll only have one subscription, so you don't have to worry about that. Resource group is just a way of managing lots of resources. So if you have a web app and a database and a scheduled job, you want to manage them all together, then you can use a resource group to do that. I'm going to create a brand new resource group by clicking the new button on here. I'll call that also DG test 0227. I'll call it, how about RG for research group. I'll call this one web for web. Make it a little easier to tell what it is. App service plan, this is where you can define things like the location of your machines and the size of those machines. So I'm going to create a new app service plan. I'll call it DG test 0227 ASP for app service plan. Location, I'll put it in the Eastern US. Pricing tier, this is, now you have $50 to play with, so you should be, if you pick the standard one, you should be fine. But if you really wanted to spend it in a hurry, you could create a bigger machine. The standard one is a one-core machine with 1.7 gigabytes of RAM, 50 gigabytes storage. Here's the specs right here. This, it doesn't say the hourly rate in here, but this is, if you ran it for 30 days, 24 hours, it would come out to about $45 a month. So plenty for, that $50 is plenty for a weekend project. If you really wanted to, let's see, I'll view all here. And you can see there are just lots of options in here for Bill. What's a big machine here? Basic. And they go up. But this one right here with 4 cores and 7 gigs of RAM, and it's actually got some other service on it. If you ran that all month, it'd be $900 a month to run this one. Well, I'm a cheapskate. I don't want to do that. I'm going to do the standard one right there. Standard. I will select it. Right there, it's in the Eastern US, I'll say okay. And then I'll create it. And it takes like a minute to create that. You can see up here, deployment started. In fact, if I scroll over to the right, this little blue thing shows me it's still running. And this messaging here shows deployment started. When it's finally done, I should see something right here. And I should also see this turning into a message saying deployment succeeded or deployment failed if I did something wrong. Let that run for a second, for about a minute. It usually takes about a minute for this. And once it's up, then I can, there it is, change some properties about it. So there it is, deployment succeeded. Here's some information about it, the resources group is saying. There's the URL. If I click that URL, you can actually see my web app. By default, it'll just stick one page in here.
right here. You know, not very interesting. But I can add more. I can deploy my code to it. So, for example, if I wanted to, if I wanted to FTP code to it, down here is some deployment credentials. Where am I here? Deployment right here. Deployment credentials, and I'll have to set these up. So I'll password, and they have to match, so that's good. I'll save that right here. But what's wrong with that? Username is not available. Let's do that, DGR2. Try that. There we go. So there's my deployment credentials. Success. And then now I can close that. Oh, I don't want to change it. Where am I here? Deployment credentials. Scale out, change app service plan. I don't want to do that. Quick start. Is it properties or properties? Yeah, here we go. Under properties, I have. Here we go. Here's the FTP. So here's the FTP user I just created. It's called DGR2. It actually puts the name of my web app in front of that. And then the host name is this one right here. So you can go to command line if you're used to. If you're a command line guy, you can come in here and FTP and say open this host right here. Copy that. Open that. Right click and paste it. And then it'll ask me for my credentials. Oh, I did something wrong there. Open, FTP. Actually, you know what I'm going to do instead? Let me exit that. I'm going to use the tool, or I guess it's quit FTP, and exit that. I have a tool called FileZilla. It's a free tool that I'm just used to using. So in here, I can say, there's the host. My username is this right here, DGR0227web/DGR2. I'll put that in there. I'll enter my password. And quick connect right here. And I'll say, yep, that's good. Okay. And then it should actually, this makes it a little bit easier for me. Here, and under W, I don't want to install a new version. Thanks. Thanks anyway. WWroot, then I can see this. This is the one page that it created for me. But if I wanted to add a new page here, let me see if I don't have a, I'll have to create one. I'm in documents temp. I'll really quickly create a new page in my documents temp folder right here. I'll call it new text file home.htm. How about that? And open that up in Notepad++ and just stick some HTML there. HTML, if I spell it right, HTML. Like that, body, and maybe H1, hello Spartax, Spartak. Keep wanting to call it Spartax, plural, but it's actually singular. And save that, and now I can come to here and how do I refresh this? Right here, right click, open, create, rename. I think I can refresh it by just going away from it and coming back into it. There it is right there. Is F5 would have done that? All right, smart guy. Give that guy a t-shirt, he's pretty smart.
Who said it?
Yeah, and give the guy that helped with the t-shirt to the guy that helped with the screen too. I should touch that every once in a while just to make sure. All right, so here, look, now I have it on here, home.htm. And now I should be able to go back to this URL right here and go to home.htm, and it'll actually be here. There it is, hello Spartahack right here. In fact, one of the properties is, I guess I closed it, one of the properties that might be useful is the start page. So here's all settings, and I think it was under application, where am I here, settings. We should have, there we go, start page. So if I have one of these here, home.htm isn't one of those, but I could put home.htm in here like that, and then maybe delete the hosting, the one that's already there, delete that one, and save it. And now that should be one of my, what it'll do is it'll look through here and look for, is there a default HTML? If there is, then use it. If not, then try that one, and so on. And the first one it should find now is home.html. So now, even without typing in explicitly, that should be my home page. Although it's control F file, let me try that. It's probably caching it. Maybe not. What am I doing wrong here? How about if I just rename this home.htm? Why don't we delete this first of all? Delete that and rename this to, how about default.htm? Try that, and then control F5 to flush it. There it is. So setting my home page. So your applications, of course, be a lot more sophisticated than that. But
I have a question.
Yes, what is it right here? Yeah, so the HTC access file, those are for if you wanted to have multiple sites on the same web server. Is that the idea? Or is that...
No. So remember what you just said, I just changed the name from that from home or whatever to default like the HTML.
Right.
If I added my HTA access file as an example, I can actually change my HTA access index or default or home or whatever to be my default file on board the website.
Ah. I see.
Yeah.
So the question was, can I use this HT access file? Am I saying it right? HTC access. HT access file. Can I use that to do some of the same things here? I don't really know the answer to that. It would be really simple to test it out. Is just create, you know, you saw it took about a minute to create this. You could FTP an HT access file and play around with it and see if the settings override the these settings right here that are under application settings.
That is my other question. You know how, like, let's say on my website, it'll say like andrewalisa.com slash index.html.
Uh-huh.
If I add my HTA access file, .html or the extension won't show on my personal website as an example. So is there a way you can remove extensions and go to like the particular URL?
You can. There are most of the frameworks can do that. So if you do like an MVC framework or a Ruby on Rails framework, then there's a routing engine built into that framework. That's generally how I do that. If you wanted to have friendly URLs that didn't have the file name extension or didn't even map to files, they map to in MVC it maps to methods in a controller class.
Okay.
Then I usually do it through that. I don't have enough experience with HTA access to answer if you can do it through there. But again, it'd be simple to test out. If you want to come over, we can test it together. Just create one, modify the HTA access file, upload it, and see if it works.
Okay, yeah, I might.
But generally, that's how I handle it. I use MVC a lot, and the routing engine takes care of that.
Okay.
All right. You also notice here in application settings, this is kind of nice. Right here, the .NET framework. You know, this is Microsoft's framework for building applications. Currently, it's running version 4.6. If I want to roll it back and use an earlier version, I can. If I wanted to use PHP, I've got options here, which version of PHP. If I wanted to use Java, right now Java's turned off, but I can turn it on. I can tell it which version of Java to use. Same thing with Python. It's turned off by default, but I can tell it which version of Python to use. All these things are supported right out of the box because they're supported in the IIS. Thing you can change 64-bit, turn on WebSockets. Always on is kind of nice because what happens with, I think also web servers do this, but I know IIS does, is that it'll go to sleep if nobody is actually requesting any pages for it. So if somebody comes along after it's gone to sleep, it actually they'll pay a penalty performance. That first request in the first thing in the morning takes a long time to fulfill. You can say always on, and then it basically pings itself all the time. All right. If you wanted to create, so I'll show you one more feature in here. There's all kinds of features. I don't want to go get too carried away. But there's a feature called deployment slots, which is really nice. And that is in deployment slots right here. And what this allows you to do is you can add a staging slot right here, and you can make it look exactly like your current production slot, and then always deploy to your staging slot, take a look at it, and make sure that everything looks good before you push it to your production.
And this is what you would do if you had a live site that your customers were hitting and you didn't want to risk breaking the site with these changes, then your final test would be deployed right here to a staging slot. You can see the URL is the same as the production URL. Instead of being dgtest0227.azurewebsites.net, it's dgtest0227web-staging.azurewebsites.net. So it's a slightly different URL. And then with a click of a button, you can swap out this the production and the staging very quickly. So those are Azure websites in general, Azure web apps. They used to be called Azure websites. Any questions? Any other questions? All right, I want to show you virtual machines. And I'm going to create a virtual machine starting in exactly the same way I did with the Azure web apps by clicking this plus new button at the top left. And under virtual machines are under compute. So under compute, I will select the template that I want. And you can see listed here, there's Windows Server 2012, Windows Server 2016, which is currently in preview. Here's an Ubuntu server, here's SQL Server, here's some software with some servers with actual some software installed like SharePoint or Dynamics AX or Oracle Database, etc. If I don't see what I want here, I can go to click See All, and then I'll see a bunch more. And so many of which have nothing to do with Microsoft. If I wanted to search for, let's say, Ubuntu right here, how about I want Ubuntu 14.04 LTS? I don't know enough about Ubuntu to know what that means, but I even have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different options. Or if I want to do something with the LAMP stack, right there, I've got an option for the LAMP stack or the MEAN stack. There are lots of stuff with MEAN stack on them. All right, I'll do a Windows server right now. Come on. There we go. Actually, you know what? No, I won't. I'll do a Red Hat server. It takes a while to spin up, so I'm not going to go through the whole thing. It usually takes about 10 minutes. But I just selected Red Hat. There's a version. I'll take version 7.2 just because it's newer. There's some information here, information about pricing. Every operating system and every server is priced a little bit differently. You're always charged by the minute. They usually quoted by the hour, but you're charged by the minute. I click on create, and there it's going to take a while to spin up. So, I'm sorry, I actually have to answer some questions here. Like, what's the name of the server? And I'll call this one DGTest0227 RH for Red Hat. How about RHVM? Red Hat Virtual Machine. The admin username, how about that? And I have an option either with a public key or a password. I'll do a password. Resource group, I can select the, hang on. An existing one, I can just select the one that I just created a little while ago, which was, what did I call it, DGTest0227, something like that. Yeah, this one right here. Grab that one and add it in here. Select a location where it's going to be. Eastern US seems fine. And click OK. I'll click OK here, but it's actually going to take about 10 minutes to spin this up. But I think I have a machine already on here. So why don't I try to... Oh, I'm sorry. There's more that I have to go... I guess I won't create this. I'll tell you, you can select the size of the machine here. There's some configuration options here that the defaults tend to be just fine here somewhere. A lot of them have to do with networking. If you have multiple ones, you can create a virtual private network in here, and there's the summary right there. Okay. So there is, it's starting to spin up this machine, but it'll take a few minutes. So I think I have, if I go down here to browse my virtual machines right here, I'm pretty sure I have one already. Oh no, I don't. Okay. But I can connect to a virtual machine. Either if it's a Windows machine, I can use remote desktop. And in fact, one of the properties of the virtual machine will be, I might have one here in classics. There we go. There's an Ubuntu server that I created a while ago. So with this one, I would use SSH to connect to it and into this machine. With the Windows machine, I would use remote desktop. And this is just a tool for logging into a remote machine. You'd give it a name, give it the admin, user, and password, and then connect to it. So I used to have one here, but it's gone. I deleted it. All right. What else did I want to do? Oh, let's do a mobile app. So this is, remember, this is creating a back-end data store and exposing that as a web service that then you can connect to from your mobile devices. If I click on New and I go to Web and Mobile, I can select a mobile app. I'll give this a name. I'll call it DG Test 0227MO. And the URL for this web service is going to be http://dgtest0227mo.azurewebsites.net. I only have one subscription, so that's fine. Resource group, I'm going to select this DG Test 0227RG that I created earlier. This is fine here. Put it in DG Test 0227 ASP, that app service plan. So it'll be in the Eastern US. It'll be that standard machine. And click Create. And this takes about the same amount of time as a web app. It should take about a minute or so to spin up this thing here. That's my Red Hat server still running. Here's my mobile app. I bet you the mobile app beats the Linux machine. And what this is going to do is it's going to create a web service. Here's the URL of it, dgtest0227mo.azurewebsites.net. If I click on it, there's nothing here. I don't have any tables behind it. When I create a table, the convention is that, let's say I create a table called table 1, then the URL for that table would be tables/table1. That will be the URL. That's my web service URL. And I can get that. The way that REST works is that it's the same URL whether I'm inserting data, updating data, deleting data, or retrieving data. The way that the web service knows the difference is through HTTP verbs. Every time you connect to a web server, a REST web service, actually, whenever you connect to any HTTP endpoint, you're always connecting with a verb. And by default, if I just type it in a browser here, it uses the GET verb. If I fill out a form online and hit submit, usually that form data is sent with the POST verb. But there are other verbs as well that you can use code to write to submit the delete verb or the put verb or the patch verb. And these map really well to the CRUD methods. If I want to create some new row, I want to insert a row, I'll use the POST verb. If I want to retrieve some data, I'll use the GET verb. If I want to delete data, I'll use the delete verb. And if I want to retrieve data, I'll use the put verb. Or I'm sorry, if I want to update data, I'll use the put verb. And I can do that simply by adding tables. The easiest way for me to show you how to add tables, let me close this right here, is there's a quick start tutorial here. Right here. Here's quick start. And quick start will actually work for any kind of, where am I here? I'm on the wrong thing. How did that get open? Close that. Where is my web service? DGTest 0227MO. I don't see it. Let me go down to All Resources and search for DGTest 0227MO. There it is. Right here. And from here, the easiest way I'll use this quick start. Right here. Quick start. It's enabling some mobile extensions for the application. That only takes a few seconds. And this is a sample app that it'll create a lot of things for you. And the app can be an iOS app, either in Objective-C or in Swift. It could be an Android app. It could be a Windows Universal app. It can be a Xamarin app for either Android's iOS or Xamarin Forms. It can be a Cordova app. Cordova is another cross-platform tool for writing code one time and deploying it to multiple platforms. So if you want to deploy it to Windows, iOS, and Android, Cordova or Xamarin are both good options.
The difference between the two is that with Xamarin, you write all your code in C sharp, whereas in Cordova, you write all your code in HTML and JavaScript. I will take, I'm going to do the Windows one because I have a Windows machine. I have all the tools for doing that. But first thing it asks me is, where's my database? I click there to connect to a database. I will add a data connection. It's a SQL database. You know that option of either SQL or Azure Table Storage. Click on here to tell it which SQL database. I can use an existing one, like I'll grab DG Test 1113 DB. That should work. Hopefully I remember the login credentials for that. Select, and then in the connection string, I'll have to tell it how to log in. And if I remembered the password correctly, give it a, come on. It didn't work. Ah, shoot. So I can't use that one because I have a bad memory. Let's discard that one, and I will select a different database. Or I'll create a database. I'll just have created a new database. I'll call this new database DG Test 0227 DB. Or this is a, yeah, DB. That works. Configure the settings here. Server name will be DG Test 0227 SQL SVR. I'll log in with DGR. The password will be that. And that should be good. OK. And give it a bit to actually, oops, I gotta click OK here. And it won't be instant. It's still going to have to create that SQL Server BidWeb up settings. Did that work? That's good. That's good. Maybe right here. That's what it's going to actually create. There we go. Now it's going to actually create. It's got to spin up a SQL Server, create a database on that server, and then configure this web app, this mobile app, to point to that server. So let that go until it says it's 10%. Don't believe this. 10% complete. It'll go from 10 to like 100% at some point. So it could be 11% really easily. Where'd they go? Any questions right now while we're just sitting around waiting? Who would like a T-shirt? Everybody wants a T-shirt.
Ask a Chris question.
A question. That's a good question.
Nah, he'll ask a Chris question.
Oh, I've got a question.
What
uniform number did my son wear? Oh, man, get those guys. That's pretty darn good. Yeah. I only had that up there for a few seconds.
I think you were first. You want to come and get a T-shirt? You see it? Yeah, come on.
So I have a question.
Yes, sir.
You were showing off the web services and using FTP file servers.
Yeah.
You were talking about like Git integrations?
Yeah, absolutely.
Is there any ways to deploy or ways to get commit?
There absolutely is. So what you need to do is just, if you're doing, have a local Git repository, then you'd want to configure it to point, you know, Git's always a two-phase commit. You always have a local repository, and you have a repository somewhere out there. And you would make that somewhere out there be the production website, the source code of that. So the URL would be just your Azure web app. In the real world, you probably would have the state, have it point to the staging environment and not to the production environment. But that would work as well. I actually have a video on that. I'll show you in a second. Yeah, see 10%. I don't believe that. There's a video right, if I go to Channel 9, I've got a blog called GCast right here. And somewhere in here, yeah, deploying an Azure web app from Git just walks you through that. It's a really short 10-minute video that walks you through that. All right, how are we doing here? Almost done? Yeah, it's still at 10%, but... what's a good question here? Let me think. That's a good idea, but I should have come prepared. Oh, yeah, this is... if you go to... The one that I was doing is channel9.msdn. So I'll point you all to this. This is a really good resource. channel9.msdn.com. And then you can search for stuff right here. You know, if you want to know Azure. I mean, if I hit that, you're going to just see an enormous amount of information. If you wanted to narrow it down to Azure, I don't know, mobile apps, then that might be. No, it's more manageable. Still, just lots and lots of information on here. The one that I was specifically pointing to because it was mine is I have a show called GCast. It's channel9@msti.com/blogs/GCast, and that has, I've only got 10 videos up there right now, but I'll add more to that. And one of them happens to be deploying an Azure web app from Git. There are I had a bunch of videos last year that I created on creating mobile services, but they're using the old portal, so that's been updated. So I need to update these videos to use this new portal. All right. That green is promising. So now it's done. All right, good. Thank you for your patience. All right, so now I have a server. Create my server-side code, or allow mobile apps to create that server-side code. And when I say create it, it'll be a method to insert, one to update, one to delete, and one to retrieve data. And I can have that server-side code either in JavaScript under Node.js or in C#. Either one is allowable. I'll just leave Node.js. That's fine. This box here says that if I run through this wizard twice, the second time is going to delete the first one. So if I run through it once, make some modifications, this is going to destroy anything that's on there. First thing I'll do is it'll create a table. And this table is just a sample table. It's a to-do application. So to-do, I mean like a list of items due today, you know, come to Sparta Hacks, design my application, code my application, and so on. It creates that table for me. Looks like it's done, I think. Has it showed up here? No, still thinking. So I've got to wait for that thing to finish. So not only is it going to create a table, but it's also going to create some server-side code, a Node.js application. Create and deploy that. That should take only about a minute. That's not a big deal. I won't show this to you until, actually I could probably do it, I can actually start it right now. Down here, this is your client application. If I clicked on connect an existing app, then it'll show me the code that I need to use to implement that. So I'll have a model called to-do item. That's what the sample is. It's just a couple of properties. The text is the thing to do, and a Boolean flag, complete, true or false. So what do I have to do, and have I done it yet? Here's the model itself. It's an ID, text, and complete, just those things. And then up here, there's in the .NET SDK, there's an object called Mobile Service Client. I can create one of those. I can point it at this Azure web app by giving it the URL of the web service. And then this thing right here will have this methods to call that web service. Now this is, you can copy and paste that in your code. I prefer to do this, create a new app and download it. And then it'll actually create a full featured application right here. It's a zip file. I'll open it up and then I will extract it to my local machine right there. And this is a Windows Universal app, so it's opening up as in Visual Studio. And the reason it did that is because originally, when I first created this, the first question it asked me is what platform do I want to use, and I said Windows, but I could have selected iOS. And this is saying, this came from the internet, do you trust it? And I'm like, yeah, the internet has kittens. I totally trust kittens. Here we go, it's just telling me, I want to install something, what? Well, I'm impressed with that, unless you install the above features. Oh, I didn't get that last time. I don't know. Let's see what happens when I install it. We'll see if it works. I know it won't work if this thing didn't finish. So let me go back to the portal and make sure that the app service backend has been initialized. That little check mark says yes, it was. So it went from 10% to 100%, that little tease right there. Okay, so it looks like whatever I had to install is good now. I always, it didn't. What does it say? Wait. Install setup warnings. Please close Visual Studio now to reduce the chance that a computer restart will be required later. What is this? I have no idea what this is. These things are not running. I'm going to try this. So bear with me. If this is going to take a long time, then I'm going to have to skip this demo. But I will close Visual Studio and retry it. And it wants the common tools for C++. Why would I want that? I can't do this demo. I have no idea why it's asking me this question. It wants to download 8 gigabytes of stuff. All right, so I cannot show you this demo this time. I'll cancel the setup for that. And I'll just show you the code for this. So I can come in here and I can look at this code, and there is, for example, in the startup right here. Can I do that? Right here, it's creating this object. Right here, this mobile service client object called mobile service. So in the application, there'll be something called, and it knows where the web service is. And then I also have code for a data model. Here's my to-do item right here, ID, text, and complete. And there's one form in this application. When that form starts up, this code here will run, and it does things like, the very first thing it does actually is it uses this app.mobile service that was created when the application launches. And right here, here's the mobile service. There's a get table. I pass in this to-do item, and it'll generate this to-do table. It's this to-do table has the smarts. Now, because it was created from this mobile service, it knows the URL of the web service. Because it has this to-do item, it knows which table I want to update. And this to-do table then just has methods like insert async. And I could pass in an object, which is a to-do item. And it has an ID and a text and a complete. And it has a method called, to table update async. Everything's done asynchronously in Windows 8. There's a delete async. There's a, if I want to do gets, if I want to get data, where am I right here? It uses link to do the get data right here. And if I want to do offline, in the keynote, the guy from Firebase was talking about how you do offline syncing if you lose connectivity. There's code in here, but it's all commented out. You have to uncomment that, and you have to install a local database for that to work. That's why it's commented out. But in here, it will initialize that local async store, and then you can have it every time you need to sync with a server, you'd run this code right here. Question? Yeah, so the question was, is it if I deploy it to another platform? Now, this is what I show here. This is client-side code. This would be running if I wanted a Windows Phone application. If I go back in here, I'll do the same thing under Quick Start and select, this time I'll select iOS. I've already connected to a database. That's already there. I've already created the backend and the table. I don't need to do that again. So I'll just come down here and I'll download a new app, and this time it'll create a Swift app. Maybe I have to go through an order here. Here. Do I have to create that way? Do that. Initialize. Come on. And I'm back at 10%, so I'm initializing it again. So let me, what that will do is actually will generate sample code, same to-do item, but in Swift. If I do it in Android, it'll do it in Java. If I do it in Xamarin, it'll create a Xamarin project. Cordova will create some JavaScript and so on. So if I'm building an application, I would start with this because this uses SDKs and allows you to create that. Let's open that up. So right here, here's the Swift app. I got to extract it, actually. Now, I don't have the Swift tools. I don't have what Xcode or anything like that on here, but you can still open it up in Notepad and see. Oh, I thought it was plugged in. I guess this power cord doesn't work unless I plug it in. Lesson learned, right? I better test that too, just in case. All right. Anyway, where am I here? This is, here's the Swift code right here. And again, I'm not really an expert on this thing here on Swift, but I think it's in this controller is where you'll see a lot of a similar code that does like in here, there's save items in there somewhere. So that method right there, save item, probably, here we go, here's the save item. And I think in here is where you'll see did save item. I'd have to dig through it, but this is sample code that you would do it, and I, you know, this is where I'd start. And then in your application, actually, you won't. That's a good place to start, but you have a different table than that. You'll want to go out here to easy tables, and from there, you'll add your own table. So customers or game scores or whatever you want to do. If it's a game, you want to have game scores. How about that? And then you select permissions. Do we want to make it anonymous? Do we want to force authentication? I would recommend starting with anonymous because you can go back and change this later. Keep it as simple as possible and click on OK. And then when you build your application, instead of hitting the URL won't be HTTP, what is it, dg0227.azurewebsites.net/table/todoitem. It'll be /tables/game scores. And then your model would be a little bit different and your... you'd create your own model, and pretty much the rest of that code would be the same. Are we done here? Let me see. All right, good. I will point out one thing here that is really nice. When you create these tables, you don't have to modify the schema. Even though these are SQL Server tables, all you have to do is to send it some JSON. And that SDK, that insert async method, will turn that .NET object into a JSON object. And the way this works is that the JSON object has properties and values. So it may have, I don't know, first name equals David, and last name equals Giard, and address equals 123 Main Street. Well, what the mobile service will do is it'll look at the properties on that JSON object, and it'll map them to columns in your table. So if I have first name equals David, last name equals Giard, it'll find a column named first name, and insert the value of David in that, a column and last name, insert the value of Giard in there. And by default, if it cannot find that column, it will create that column and infer the data type from the type of data that's in the value of that property. So it's a really nice way of very quickly building up your table. You don't have to go and change the schema and then bounce back to change it. Just set a JSON object, it'll automatically modify the table for you. All right. So those are mobile applications in a nutshell. Any more questions on that? That was a good question. Get the guy's shirt. Please. All right. I want to show you one more thing here. This is probably the simplest thing you could do. If I just want to really quickly create a web app based on a content management system like WordPress, there's a template for it. Is it here on this page? Yeah, right here, scalable WordPress site. And on here, all I have to do is come in here and give it a name. And then when I do this, it'll actually create a WordPress site with all sorts of boilerplate text launched on it. How many people have used WordPress before? Now, I really like WordPress because you don't really need to know any HTML. You don't really need to know any coding. There's a nice, what you see is what you get interface. First time you launch it, it asks you what theme do you want to use and what's the title of your site, what's your admin login. It walks you through that stuff. And it's ideal for, you know, once word gets out that you're a computer science major, everybody in your family calls you up and says, hey, can you create a new website for this flower shop that I just opened? And which is fine until they start calling every week and saying, can you add this today's sale for my new website? And now you're trapped. You know, you can't tell Aunt Mary that you're not going to update your website because she doesn't know how to write that code. But with something like WordPress, you can hand it off to her and she can update with today's sale or any message she wants because she doesn't have to know HTML. She doesn't have to know JavaScript. She doesn't have to know any back-end code. And so WordPress is really nice for that. In fact, it doesn't have to be WordPress. It could be Joomla or Drupal. There's a whole bunch of
content management systems out there, and there, you know, many of them are supported in Azure. The beauty of this is, you know, WordPress is written in PHP, an open source language. It has nothing to do with Microsoft. It stores its data in MySQL, an open source database. It's got nothing to do with Microsoft, but they're both supported in Azure. All right, let's see. Let me close that. And let me create an... The last thing I'll do is I'll create an Azure Machine Learning workspace. I haven't done this in a while, so bear with me on this. I go down here to, I think it's under New. Data and Analytics. Then I have Machine Learning right here. And that takes me into this interface. And so this is the machine learning if you want to do, take some data sets and go through some predictive analytics. While that's loading, I'll show you the blog that my colleague Jennifer created. It's an article. It was how to win a hackathon with Azure Machine Learning. And this will, I guarantee, be the very first hit in the search engine. And right here, you can go through this and learn about Azure Machine Learning. It takes like an hour or so to go through this tutorial, and she gives you a few ideas of what you can do. So from here, let's see. There we go. Quick create. I'll create a workspace name. I'll call it DG Test 0227 ML. I'll just call it ML. DG Test ML. Oops, I guess it's already created. 0227 ML. How about that? I'll put it in, this is only available in three different regions. Not every service is available in every Azure region. This one's available in South Central US. Storage account is where it's going to store this stuff. I've got one, I'll just use that. And right here, oh, looks like I had one already. I could have used that. So here we go. So let me, it's created one. And when I open this up, then I can sign it into ML Studio. And this is the graphical interface that you can use to start building your machine learnings. So if you have a background in machine learning, this should be pretty easy to use. Now, the people may ask, well, why should I use ML Studio if I already know how to do machine learning? And the answer is it'll get your application up and running a lot faster because you want to do a lot of the boilerplate, the plumbing stuff. It'll take care of that for you with this drag and drop stuff. And you can add custom modules and write your own specific code. If you don't know machine learning, then this is a big help because it is hard to write that code. You do have to know at least something about it. And I think I would recommend if you haven't worked with machine learning, this gives you some of the basics right inside of here, these tutorials that she walks you through. Where am I? Right here. And then also there's a lot of samples. So if I grab a sample here, I don't know what they all are. I'll just grab one and show it to you. Cross-validation for regression auto imports. I'll just open that up. And then you'll get a chance to see ML Studio. This is a complete solution right here. There we go. This experiment demonstrates the use of cross-validation regression, and that's about all it says. And if I look at here, there's some data that's coming in, and raw data coming in, and somewhere on here it says, where's the data coming from? A CSV file. I can view that data right here. Right here, here's the CSV file, it's downloading. It's probably a big file, so I may regret clicking that. Finish downloading, I'll open it up. I think CSV will open in Excel. It's a comma delimited file. But Excel can handle that. And you can see there's all this data that's coming in. What is it? Make, it's about automobiles, fuel type, number of doors, body style, and so on. And there's, it's not a huge data set actually. It's only about a couple hundred rows. So I'll close that. And go back to here. And there's some cleanup options in here. There's some linear regression, tree regression, different kinds of regression that you can do. And creating this model. So once I do this, I can run it. And once I've run it, which is still going, it's queued right here. This shouldn't take too long because there isn't a ton of data in here. But once it's done running, then I could turn it into a web service. I could do that very quickly. So let's come in here and finish that. There, finished running. I can, let's see here. Move that out of the way. I think, there we go. Oh, I see, this is just a navigate. If I have a really big tree here, workflow, then I can add that. And I think if I right click here, is that where I can view the data? Scored results, evaluate results, this one right clear. Save the data set. Oh, here we go, I can visualize the data, that's kind of nice. Open it up here, I think it uses Power BI to show me some analysis data. So right in here, it gives me some information about how the data is distributed. You know, this field, this make field, I've got a bunch of Toyotas and not very many Dodges. I got some information about what the data looks like in graphical format. And if I wanted to set it up as a web service, I click on this and it adds inputs and outputs, endpoints for that service. And walks it explains to me what it's doing here. That's what this is doing. So yeah, data flows, etc. And finish that, run the experiment. I can run it again with these endpoints, and then I could deploy that web service. In fact, there's even inside of Azure, you can deploy it to Azure right here. So let that run. That finished, and from here, then I could either deploy that web service somewhere. And right here, here's the, where am I here? Somewhere here is my web service. So here I can test it. So I test it, then it actually will call the web service. So these are the endpoints that I can put in a Toyota. I actually don't know this data well enough to actually to put something in here. What was the values of the fuel type? I have to know the data pretty well to, at least well enough to know what valid values in here. But then I can test it on here, and I'll go back, was it here? To, no, it was here. Let me say go back. And deploy it to you can publish it to the gallery, and then Microsoft would host that web service for you. So with a few clicks of a button, you do it. So in yours, you can just, the idea is just grab some information in here and just drag it on here and start wiring these things up. So that's a really nice tool. I can't give you a whole lot more information than this because I don't know this one that well, but I would definitely, if you're interested in that, I definitely would encourage you to start with, let's stay on this page, start with this article right here, and then also we'll point you to some other videos that are available. I think she posted them to her blog. Jennifer Marsden's blog right here. Oh, here we go. Here's the machine learning to predict who will survive the Titanic. And in here, this is a nice video. It's only about 26 minutes long. And let you know whether or not you would have survived that thing. All right, so I think what I've got, we're just about out of time. And what I've tried to do is to give you some ideas of what you can use Azure for and get you started in using these things. I'm not going home, so I'm not sure what's happening in this room right now, but if they kick us out of this room, I will be right down the hall, and I'm here to answer some questions, and Brian, my colleague, is down there as well, and we'll be here as long as there are people asking questions. All right.
And we have super cool open source T-shirt with a Microsoft logo on the arm. So if you want some, please line up.
Come on up, yeah. Come up in an orderly fashion. Ah! All right. Hey, thanks a lot, guys.
All right.
Just a second.
No, don't worry.